after hearing that CBS news, I'm shaking my head, and as is John in the control room. Is there any good news out there? I'll tell you. When you get 108 degrees in Omaha, today looks pretty good for Tucson. 103. Anyway, it's Bill Buckmaster with you on Tuesday, the 14th of June. It's Flag Day 2022. We're in our 12th year on the radio, 34th year on TV and radio on the market. The Buckmaster Show broadcasts from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. That's one piece of good news. We've got so many programs on our podcast that go all the way back over 11 years. Easy to find everything on the webcast, so check that out. And our live line when we do our telephone interviews, which we will do in a few moments, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. If you are going to be traveling by air this summer, make sure you pack your patience. My goodness, I'm sure everybody has seen the pictures by now of what's going on in Europe. Some of those waits to even get into these countries at the airports, 2-3 hours. Everybody seems to be wanting to do what is now being called revenge travel. That's people having, you know, 2 years of pent-up demand and wanting to go out and travel. And on the flip side, we have seen some of the airlines struggling big time to meet the demand. Let's bring in now our contributor on aviation, senior captain, JetBlue captain Jeff Lattis, one of the senior pilots at JetBlue. Jeff is a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. He flies the Airbus A320 and the A321. Nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free flight experience. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill.
No revenge
on me, though.
I mean, it's crazy out there. When we were coming back from Hawaii, we came into San Diego, and it's like every flight in the world must have landed at the same time. There must have been 1,000 people, 500 easily, maybe I'm exaggerating with 1,000, waiting for bags. I mean, any airport, major airport, you're seeing just huge crowds, and I'm sure you're seeing it because you're on the front lines. What's been your experience so far this summer?
Well, I just finished a trip a couple of days ago, and every flight was full. And, you know, obviously the airports, as you have described just now, are a bit chaotic. And, you know, I was lucky because the weather was good and, it seems like the operation was working okay. So we didn't have any issues over a 3-day period. But there's always that big, but it will happen, whether it's weather related. That's probably going to be your biggest concerns as far as delayed and canceled flights going into the summer, but it's going to be a crazy summer.
Well, the demand is certainly now back to the pre-COVID days, demand back to 2019. And Jeff, now with the United States last weekend dropping the requirement that you have to do that test, the COVID test, 24 hours in advance of your return flight to the United States, that's now international travel's going to go off the charts. But there are all these economic indicators, the big jump in fuel prices. You've got this pilot shortage situation. The number of airline pilots and engineers has decreased by almost 4%. Well, that might not seem like a lot, but that's thousands of people. And we need a lot of new pilots, 14,000 new pilots each year for the next decade, it's been estimated. Are there that many in the pipeline?
Part of the problem with filling that backlog of, you know, you mentioned the 4% is just simulator space. Just plain, just not enough instruction capability out there. So all you can imagine, just about every schoolhouse that has simulators for the airlines out there, they're running 24/7. And you got to remember, it's more than just training new pilots. You also have annual training requirements for the existing pilots that they have to take care of. Usually most airlines use that as a priority. And so that kind of slows the pipeline down a little bit. But, you know, even my company, I can't remember how, we're hiring about 1,000 pilots, and we're the fifth largest airline in the country, and it's a distant fifth. American, United, Southwest, Delta, they're probably hiring close to 3,000 or 4,000 pilots a year right now.
Wow.
So, you know, it's that pipeline will be filled eventually. It just so happens this summer is going to be one of the years that it's going to be a little bit short. Now, I'd like to address a little bit about what this shortage really means. Most companies have enough pilots to cover their operation if it runs on schedule. It's when it starts getting a little out of balance, when flights start becoming delayed due to maintenance or weather, that pilots will, you know, I'm sure everybody in your listening audience has heard of pilots timing out.
Yes.
We are regulated by law on how many hours we can fly per day, how many hours we can be on duty per day, and how many hours we have to be in rest per day. And that's all law. And we are not allowed to exceed any of that. And so when your operation starts running behind, then you start running into where pilots need to be in rest longer and they can't do their next day flight. And then you have to find reserves to fly that. Or if it gets delayed too far, pilots will time out. Typically on a normal daytime domestic flight, that's 14 hours we can be on duty. So if you are going to be working 7 hours and your flight gets delayed, you know, that starts, your clock is ticking. And, you know, if you have 3 or 4 legs that you're flying, you might not be able to fly that last leg. So now you got to find more reserves to fly that one. And then you might be going into crew rest problems. So it's a snowballing effect. You know, for normal operations, there's probably enough pilots out there. Most companies have 20% of their pilots in reserve that aren't operating unless they need to. But that's what causes this. And I was thinking about advice to give people.
Yes.
If you want to avoid the frustrations, I would suggest that you book your flights early, obviously.
Early in the day, right?
Early in the day.
Yeah.
And the reason why, because flights will tend to start drifting late as the day goes on. And then if you get some weather event, which usually happens in the afternoon, thunderstorms, then now things just start tumbling out of control. So if you can get to your destination by early afternoon, that's probably the best thing you can do. So that's my advice anyway.
And get to the airport early.
And get to the airport early because it's pretty chaotic.
Yeah, let me
pack light.
Yeah, something you said about that 14-hour, you could go up to a 14-hour work day. When do you go on the clock? When does the company say Jeff Lattice is now logged in?
Typically, the way it works is, you know, and it's company specific, but we usually. Our report time is what we call it, is an hour prior to our scheduled takeoff. Now, they can adjust that. If the flight ends up being delayed, we can get a message saying, hey, your new report time is. And that's when your clock starts. Most of the time, they don't adjust it because there's a chance a plane could come online and they need you to get on it, you know, whether they pull one as a spare, or they reschedule on one airplane and say, okay, this is your airplane now. So they usually, most of the time, our report time stays pretty steady, and it's usually an hour before the scheduled push time, essentially, or departure time. So, you know, there's 1 hour that your clock is ticking, you know. So now that does change, by the way. I give you a very general, if you're going to be flying a late night flight, it's only 12 hours. And it depends also on how many legs you're flying per day, on how many hours you can be on duty. So that does vary.
Yeah, it can be a long day for sure. All right, Jeff Lattice, got to go. But real quickly, Jeff, less does the atmosphere without the masks, is it easier for you and the team?
Oh, much. the frustration level seems to have dropped completely.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I haven't noticed too many disrupted passengers recently. A lot of the last 2 years, you know, a lot of those disruptions were because of masks.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure there's going to be frustrations because of the, you know, busyness.
Oh, yes. Summer. People missing connections and all of that. So they'll be
crowded. Yep. You know, you're shoulder to shoulder in an airplane for 7 hours, et cetera. I mean, that can be very frustrating, too. So, like you said earlier, patience.
All right, Jeff.
The biggest bag you should bring with you is patience.
There you go. Jeff, good luck as you continue flying into the summer. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Mona's Danish Bakery open right now for lunch. They do take Mondays off, and they take that well-deserved day off because they open at 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Sunday. They do a great breakfast. They do a great lunch. Try the tuna melt. Ask Mona about that. And they're open right now, as I say, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Great pictures of all of the menu, pretty much all of the menu items. I don't know if they have my favorite, the tuna melt, up there. That's kind of what they call some of these restaurants do, a secret menu. Yeah, that might be the secret menu item for lunch up at Mona's. All right, Shelley Fishman is next. And what do you expect? Thumbs down. Anyway, Shelley's attitude is thumbs up, and he'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
Bear market or bull market, Shelley Fishman still maintains that wonderful demeanor, very nice guy, smiling demeanor. And hi, Shelley, how are you?
Yeah, a thumbs up
kind
of guy.
You didn't expect that kind of introduction. But
no, how are you, Bill?
Doing very well, doing well. But I'll tell you, it's tough for investors, especially those of a particular age, shall I say, baby boomers, looking at what has happened this year. Let's get right to it. Let's talk a little bit about how do we mitigate losses.
Well, there are several ways to do it, but I would caution that now it's really too late to start.
Right.
So if you are managing your own portfolio, or if you have an individual broker, somebody you have a relationship with, a financial advisor, who is actively managing your portfolio as an individual, or even under the supervision of, say, a bigger broker-dealer, I don't think you're getting the kind of research and advice that would safely navigate through these kinds of waters. If, on the other hand, you have a large piece of your investments actively managed by one of these large management companies that are constantly tweaking and pushing and pulling and making adjustments, then you're probably in pretty good shape. So, I mean, nobody survives a day full of red ink. On the other hand, when you do have those kinds of days, and we've had, a fair number of them in the past couple of months, you are in a position where the temptation is to try to time the market, try to pick where the lows are and reinvest during those times.
That's pretty dangerous,
that is
especially
very
now
dangerous.
At this point into this thing.
Right, because on any day, you could have an upswing that is a day that if you miss that day, it kills your entire year.
Yeah.
So my advice to people, especially boomers like us, whose investments are really what are the basis for our retirement,
yep.
That all you can really do is cut back on spending to the extent that you can, not be selling off those investments and wait for the recovery. There will be a recovery. It will come, and when it comes, we'll recover everything that we lost and then move on from there. But if you can't wait that out, then you're in a position where you really have to work with an advisor to very carefully see what you're going to liquidate, what you're not going to liquidate, and the worst thing you can do, you know, there's an old joke about, you know, never hit the send button on an email at 11 o'clock at night.
That's true. I've heard that.
You know, lots of reasons why you shouldn't do that. It's the same kind of reasoning, you know, when there's all this red ink on your chart when you're looking at your portfolio, that's not the time to be making hasty decisions.
Sleep on it.
Sleep on it at least one night, maybe 17.
Yeah. It's a tough time.
Yeah, you know, I remember when I'd hear advisors, and my own advisor at the time would say, "You got to stay the course," and I'd scratch my head and say, "Are you nuts?" But you know, having lived through several of these now and been an advisor for, 15, 18 years myself, stay the course may be the only strategy that makes any sense. Now, that said, when all of this kind of evens out and things get back to something more like normal, I would very strongly suggest that people have a discussion with their advisor that talks to who can manage on a day-to-day, minute-by-minute kind of basis, how their portfolios are allocated. There are large professional money managers out there that where you pick several strategies. These managers will keep you within that strategy. But during any given day, they're zigging and zagging and doing everything. And they have staffs of hundreds of people that are doing this analysis, and your chances of surviving in a downturn are much better with that kind of management, I think, than just having a really smart advisor who's a stock picker. You know, at the end of the day, stock pickers just don't do that well.
No, they don't. How are we doing as far as your prediction that despite being in a bear market down 20% from the highs in January, you are still saying that by the end of the year we'll be on the positive side?
Keeping in mind that, you know, there's nothing sacred about a year.
No.
But yes, I believe that we will come out on the positive side of this year. And the reason I believe that is because nothing fundamental has changed in the economy. The economy is still in very, very good shape. And people are finding a way now. They switched to goods from services when the pandemic looked to be easing. And that's what's caused a lot of the inflation. But now we see consumers are switching back to services.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing indications that people are doing the rational things that you want them to do. My biggest fear for the economy right now is, number one, Russia will do something aggressive throw things into panic. But I'm very afraid that the Fed will overreact
tomorrow,
and they could overreact as quickly as today or tomorrow, and go to a 1% rate hike or even a 0.75% rate hike. I don't think that's warranted. I do not want to see this economy go into recession. I would rather see people saying, woe is me, gas is too high, I'm paying too much, and cut back, than be unemployed.
Yeah, I think that's what you get with a recession. I agree, Shell, and I think we're seeing it already. And I didn't say this in the interview with Jeff Lattice. We're already seeing it. Airline tickets now, the airlines are reporting that now are starting to go down the other way. People are cutting back. And that's an example. People will start to cut back.
Right. And it's up to individuals to get us out of this and engineer a soft landing for themselves. It's up to the Fed to be very, very careful about this. But I think the administration, look, I'm a card-holding Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe Democrats have always been better for the economy than Republicans, and I've got the data to prove it. That aside, I think there are more things that this administration, both in the near term and in the medium term, can be doing to curb this inflation. And I'm, pounding on this, but we need to cut back on those Trump import tariffs. We need to drop most of them. We need to be able to put pressure on corporations to keep their price hikes down to a minimum, and you can't do that when, you know, the one hand you say that to a corporation. On the other hand, their imported goods are so much more expensive because of tariffs that don't need to be there.
Could Biden do that with executive action?
He can. The same way the tariff was put on by executive
action. If he did that, do you think the markets would react favorably?
I think the markets would react very favorably.
Well, do it then, President Biden. Do it.
The other thing that Biden can be doing is taking a couple of programs from his Build Back Better plan that have a direct impact on the expenses that people are feeling, like childcare, like prescription drugs. And he should be saying, look, okay, fine, you're not going to pass my Build Back Better plan. You're not going to reverse the Trump tax decreases for corporations. At least give me some of these things that will have a direct and immediate impact on the prices people are paying at, you know, at the drugstore, the prices people are paying for childcare. Those things will impact millions of people positively. The Republicans won't go along with it because they want to see inflation continue through the election because they're pounding on it. I get that. The Democrats, when the Republicans are having a hard time. Nevertheless, if you're really concerned about the impact on families and the impact on people, there are things this administration can and should be doing.
All right. Makes such good sense. Shelley Fishman always making good sense. Thanks very much, Shelley. Have a great week.
You too, Bill.
All right.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. They're getting ready for the summer rainy season over at Green Things. It's a great time to buy some beautiful color for the garden, because when the rains come, this will make things really get going. 3384 East River Road for Green Things. Website is greenthingsaz.com. Zocalo Village is their sister business on their 13-acre site. Beautiful Zocalo Village, 5 standalone shops full of beautiful Mexican pottery like Talavera pottery, imported items from all over Latin America, and some European items as well. That website is ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, that is sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. But right now we have an in-studio interview. It's always great to welcome back Dr. Zach Guido. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Zach is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. He is an assistant research professor at Arizona Institutes for Resilience, acronym appropriately, AIR. Arizona Institutes for Resilience coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects that are from really across the UA campus that kind of focus on everything from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water, resources, and beyond. It's kind of a big umbrella, isn't it, Zach?
Yeah, it's exciting because so many people do some really interesting things that are important. So
yeah, you got a great team over there. On my Facebook page Friday night, I was out doing some watering, and that was when we kind of got some buildup, remember, of some clouds.
That's
to
right.
The south. And I actually smelled rain. So I posted, I had my first whiff, I said, of monsoon 2022.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
On Facebook, and a lot of people said, not only did they get a whiff, but some people actually got some rain. So a little teaser.
It was a tease. You know, I actually turned on my my weather radar scope app and on Thursday and looked at the maps, and it was very reminiscent of the monsoon, you know, like these little cells that were popping off, and it was a tease, some moisture around, but obviously it's too early for the monsoon proper, but it's still helpful. It's helpful particularly because this is the height of, you know, the fire season, so any humidity that's around really sort of tamps down the fire risk and slows the burning. So we'll take that, but not the monsoon quite yet.
The monsoon officially, according to the National Weather Service, begins tomorrow, June 15th. There was some, I always look at the summaries that each of the different climatologists working at the National Weather Service, you know, they write up what they call their forecast summary. And actually, after that little event Friday, one of the forecasters said, it's looking very good for an early start to the monsoon. And I've noticed in subsequent postings on discussion, they've kind of backed off on that a little bit. So I think what might be happening, Zach, is we might get some rain here in the next couple of days, but it's not an indication this is the monsoon.
Right. And I mean, people quibble about this all the time. It's like, what is monsoon start date, and what's the definition of it? And, you know, the National Weather Service a while ago now, 10 years, maybe more, like they just sort of made the monsoon start date a fixed date because obviously there's quite a bit of hazards, flash floods, lightning, whatnot associated with the monsoon, and it just made it easier to communicate. You know, prior to that, sort of the scientific definitions, if you will, of the monsoon start date had to do with dew point.
Yes, I hated that.
They were hard to communicate.
Oh my goodness, yeah. That was so hard to figure out.
I mean, basically, what what you need.
You had to have three straight days. Let me see if I got that. Three straight days of dew points over a certain, yeah. I don't remember.
54 what, degrees.
54 degrees, yeah. Dew point.
And it changed depending on where you were. Like Phoenix was 55, so the thresholds were different. Some National Weather Service offices didn't adhere to that. So they just fixed it at June 15th. Mm-hmm. But really what, you know, the monsoon, you know, starts when we get the sort of the buildup of this high pressure ridge that moves to our north and puts us into a different sort of atmospheric wind flow that helps bring moisture up from the south.
Monsoon means basically change of direction, wind direction.
Wind direction, that's correct. So, yes. I mean, you know, a lot of that work was done, you know, on the Asian monsoon, which is the papa bear when it comes to the monsoons, and we mm-hmm. have a baby one here, but obviously it's still really an important event. It's the event, I think, that, you know, captures the imagination of everybody in the Southwest. It's everybody sort of enjoys it. There's obviously, you know, hazards to pay attention to.
You even had a contest last year about it.
Yeah, we're running it back again.
What?
Yep, we're doing it again.
There's
Southwest.
There's been no publicity about that. So tell our listeners what that.
We just started.
Okay.
Right. So my colleagues and I, at this time of year, like nobody really cares about us until the monsoon comes around, and then they're always calling, what's the monsoon going to be like?
Yeah, right?
Okay. So we never really have a good answer for that. You know, the official forecast this year is basically a shrug. I mean, it's a slight lean for the entire season to wetter conditions. But, I mean, it's the slightest of probabilities. It's probably better to think about it as a toss-up. We can talk in a minute about, like, what's on the horizon in the near term, because there does look to be some monsoon moisture going to come in here in the next week or so. So we don't really have a good answer, mostly, for what the monsoon's going to be like. So we decided to flip that question around and just ask people what they thought it was. Mm-hmm. And we turned it into a game.
Kind of like a dartboard thing.
Yeah, it's kind of, we call it Monsoon Fantasy Forecast.
Okay.
And if you search Monsoon Fantasy, Google search it, you'll find us. You can sign up. We have prizes, really cool prizes. Basically, how it works is
won a full weather, like a home weather station last year in your initial contest.
That's right. It was a woman who had moved from the Midwest and was like, "What am I going to do with this?" It's a really good weather station. So we changed our prizes, and we have first place a $400 gift card from Amazon. Second place $300, and third place $200. So
okay.
But we can talk more about weather. But if you want to play, make your forecasts, win some prizes, kind of like fantasy sports, go to monsoonfantasy.arizona.edu.
It's kind of interesting that the woman who moved out here, she had no idea that, you know, we had just gone through, I think, the driest winter and had no idea how many inches of rain we normally get here. And that was like throwing a dart. And she hit it because it turned out, it was one of the wettest rainy seasons ever.
Yeah, so I've been asked quite a bit, like what my sort of forecasts are and you know, what the official forecasts are. I might have even said this to you last time I was on this show, and I'd almost bet my house and my cat that it's it's not going to be as wet as last year, particularly in July.
I kind of get that feeling too.
But, you know, there is a lean right now toward it starting early. And when you have an early onset, the correlations with the season there are correlations with the season for total rainfall. And that's because, it gives a couple more events during the monsoon season. Looks like, you know, could even be Saturday that we get some rainfall. Mm-hmm. But again, it'll probably be short lived and then, you know, we need that ridge to build in. Hopefully, you know, we'll get that and it'll be persistently to our north. And much like it was, you know, in July and for the first part of August, we'll be under sort of persistent conditions that will favor rain.
And as I recall, last year was more of a textbook start around the 4th of July. And it turned out to be such a very productive monsoon season.
Yeah, that is right. I do think it started very similarly to the average onset date.
Yeah.
And it was fueled by these two events that were really sort of strange events that don't happen very often. But I don't know if you recall at the end of July, there was like these 2 days of just like soaking conditions, mm-hmm. dropped a couple inches of rain. So a lot of the, you know, Tucson last year had, you know, record rainfall for any month in its on its record. So I think
I do remember that. It was kind of weird. We didn't see the sun almost for two straight days. It was very much like living up in the Pacific.
It was
Northwest,
fantastic.
And it was wonderful. And we went into that year as dry as we have been now this year. You look at those rainfall totals, barely a half an inch officially for Tucson for our whole year. So we really need a very robust and productive summer rainy season. But I tend to agree with you. I just don't see, I have just a hunch I have, I don't see history repeating itself with a big, big rain summer year.
Yeah, but even if we get an average one, I mean, I think that's a really high bar. Last year is a really high bar.
Of
I think
course.
It was the third wettest on mm-hmm. record in Tucson. And, mm-hmm. Even if we get an average one, that's important. But you're right. Like last year, the talk was, you know, coming out of the first of our back-to-back La Nina winters, we were really dry. And, you know, drought was sort of a persistent phenomenon. You know, we had fires raging as we always do. In fact, this year, New Mexico has been sort of the epicenter for fire, less so Arizona. But, you know, one just flared up right north of Flagstaff.
And we've had one over at Bava Kiveri.
Mm-hmm.
We were smelling smoke in the air yesterday when we went out early to water. My wife says, I smell smoke in the air. And then I checked it out. I guess, yeah, there is a fire over at Bava Kiveri to the west, southwest.
Right. And, you know, fast forward this year, and, you know, we had a double dip La Nina, which tends to bring drier conditions to the winter. Happened two winters ago and happened this winter. And, you know, we were just slightly wetter is not the right word, less dry than two winters ago this winter. But it was still, like you said, like 40% of average. I think if you go back to October 1st to today, mm-hmm. it's been about 40% of average, which is really dry. It's like, I think it's in Tucson, it's the fifth driest on record. So,
all right, we're going to pause right here, Zach, and talk a little bit when we come back about La Nina. While it's brought this very, very dry conditions to Tucson, up in the Pacific Northwest, wow, they are getting just hammered. Wettest April on record in Portland and Oregon, in Washington State. Highs have been around 60 degrees, lows in the 40s, and lots of rain. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The Buckmaster Show guarantee. We have fun with this. It's usually with our guarantee is for Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City than it will be in Tucson. And normally, that's really right on. Look at that, 85 degrees right now at midday over in Silver City. And it's can be up to 15, even more degrees cooler in Silver City. And that the reason is it's 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation really does make a difference. It makes a really nice getaway. Only about a 3-hour drive. Start your planning at southwestnewmexico.org. UA climate scientist Zach Guido with me. You love Silver City, don't you, Zach?
You know, I've been. And I
know
do,
you've been over there.
I do like it a lot. Yeah. I love the Gila. And
the Gila area, it's just great. We mentioned before the break, Dr. Zach Guido with us, we mentioned this kind of atmospheric river that is set up in the Pacific Northwest. And I think the event that they had at Yellowstone, which, by the way, Yellowstone National Park is closed. The Yellowstone River is at an historic high. Buildings have been washed away. Roads completely washed away in several parts of Yellowstone. They had a huge rain event, and it melted a lot of snow as well, Zach. And so what role is our old friend La Nina? And if you would explain for us, people get confused, the difference between La Nina and El Nino.
Right. It's funny. I was scrolling through my Twitter feed and seeing a bunch of those images of the West Yellowstone River just like
taking out a whole building right there on the river. Yeah.
And just before getting into the El Nino, La Nina distinction, I think this is an event. You know, it actually can happen here in the Southwest. And by that, I mean, well, and a little bit to our north in the Rocky Mountains, where you get very warm conditions and you get precipitation on top of snow. And like these springtime floods, you know, when you get these rain on snow events, can really sort of drive flooding, flash flooding. And that is in part what's, of course, there's copious amounts of rain, part of this big system that's hitting the Pacific Northwest and actually tracking inland. And, you know, we tend not to think about the summer and late spring as being like the season where El Nino or La Nina exerts much of its influence. And that's because it's the phenomenon itself sort of takes a little bit of a break in the late spring and summer. And it's more of a wintertime phenomenon. And it's difficult, I would say, to attribute this particular event that we're talking about to a La Nina sort of influence, but it probably played a role. It's just difficult to say what role and how much it actually did play. But yeah, so, you know, climate science, one of the key things that climate science has found over the last 30 years is that what the state of the tropical Pacific Ocean really controls to a large extent what the seasonal weather is like. And there's changes in the sea surface temperatures, you know, from Peru all the way west to Indonesia. And
basically 20 degrees north and 20 degrees south of the equator.
Yeah, big region. Yeah. And there's this sort of cell that's set up where you get a coupling between the sea surface temperatures and the atmosphere in this circular flow of winds, and then the winds sort of, because they exert a force on the sea surface temperature, and they sort of pile up or cause the sea surface temperatures to slush back and forth in the Pacific Ocean. And so sort of an El Nino event, you sort of have a La Nina event, you sort of have a piling of that warmer water westward. And El Nino event, you sort of have that warmer water sort of move more central in the Pacific and toward Peru. And that changes the atmospheric flow to the extent where it exerts an influence on the westerlies and the subtropical weather, and it influences the position more or less of the jet stream. So yeah. in a La Nina event, the jet stream tends to stay a little bit further north, which is one of the reasons why we tend to be drier than average down here. But the Pacific Northwest tends to be wetter.
Yeah.
I say tend, and that's really important because these conditions don't always play out. There's a lot of strings being pulled on the atmosphere that make it so that these sort of general rules hold, but like any one year can break those. And just to finish the loop here, the El Nino event, we tend to have the jet stream be more in line with streaming across the Pacific into the southern part of the U.S. Like we often hear like Pineapple Expresses, which usually form in our and infiltrate our region in El Nino years.
Yeah, I mean, when we were over in Hawaii, people were saying they had not seen the island, the main island of Oahu, look so green. They've been getting just tremendous amount of moisture. And it had to do, from what the weather people were saying in Hawaii, with the trade winds. There's been a kind of a different shift in them. They were bringing more rain from the northern Pacific area. And that possibly could again be connected to the La Nina.
Yeah, there's complex patterns that set up. To be honest, I don't know a ton about the sort of climate, what the climate's like that far to the west. Mm-hmm. But certainly like during El Nino events, like I said a minute ago, the Pineapple Expresses, they're sort of named after sort of their origin in that area of
Central Pacific.
Central Pacific, mm-hmm. Yeah. I would also say that La Nina tends to reduce the frequency of Pacific hurricanes, and so it lowers the risk in the Pacific, but it does the opposite in the Atlantic. And so this year, again, so we're now sort of in this weird territory where it does look like we're going to go into a third consecutive La Nina, which hasn't, I believe it's happened just twice before since 1950. So that's sort of like rare territory. And I believe the forecast for hurricanes in the Atlantic is above average, and in the Pacific it's below average, reflecting the La Nina conditions.
All right. And again, for those that want to take part in the contest that you and your colleagues are doing, what should people do?
Right. So the easiest thing is just Google search Monsoon Fantasy and maybe throw in University of Arizona. But the URL is monsoonfantasy.arizona.edu.
And the prediction would be for, how does it work? You can predict how much rainfall will fall during the monsoon. Is that the way it goes?
Yeah, so it works. Actually, we do it around five cities: Tucson, Phoenix, Flagstaff, El Paso, and Albuquerque. So five major cities in the Southwest. And they have to make forecasts each month, and they accumulate points for each of those cities based on how accurate their forecasts are to what actually happens and the riskiness of the forecast. And then they accumulate points, and much like sort of March Madness.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And then you can win some good prizes this year.
Yep. Amazon gift cards.
There you go. Thank you very much, Zach.
Always
a pleasure. All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Dave Ramsey, his very popular show about money, is coming up after CBS Network News. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido, who's with me in studio, and John on the other side of the glass in our control room, we hope y'all have a great afternoon.